Hello and welcome to another episode of Coffee and Code. I'm your host, Ashley Coffee, and I am so excited to be joined by two brothers today from Kinemerik, Lucky and Ash. Welcome to Coffee and Code, Lucky and Ash.
Thanks for having us, Ashley.
You two built Kinemerik. So quickly for those listening, Kinemerik believes innovation only matters when it drives outcomes. And that's why at Kinemerik, they help organizations transform learning, engagement, and performance, not just build demos. As we dive into our conversation today, we're going to be talking about the immersive space, enterprise XR, and how the human first approach that Kinemerik is building is creating a new space for individuals to collaborate and find new insights that are meaningful for businesses. So I'm excited to have you on the show and excited to talk through Kinemerik.
Awesome. We're excited to be here.
A little bit about you guys for the audience. Ash, you drive Kinemerik's vision and technical strategy, bringing decades of experience building advanced XR and AI platforms and high performance engineering teams. And you lead product architecture and creative direction across the company's spatial solutions. And Lucky, you oversee Kinemerik sales, partnerships, and commercial strategy with a strong background in client development and brand growth. And you lead go-to-market efforts and ensure enterprise customers receive exceptional guidance and execution. And I feel like you two really complement each other well. So let's just dive into it. How did you get here with Kinemerik?
Sure. So I think it happened a little organically. Lucky and I have been building software for probably the better part of the last 18 or 19 years commercially. And we really, you know, we were always interested in software and technology since the time we were kids and teenagers. And coming out of a previous venture that we were partners in as well, we started a studio that was building our own IP for mobile applications real early, like iPhone 3G, the first app store. And from there, that business grew. But, you know, we're always looking for what was, you know, what was next. So when the Google Cardboard kind of came out, we started dabbling with that and we were hooked on VR and all of the devices that, you know, started to come down the pipeline thereafter. And at a certain point, we started to add VR and AR as services to, you know, the business that we were already doing that was very focused on mobile and web tech. And at some point, you know, I think in the last two and a half years, we decided, you know, we just want to kind of focus on spatial technology overall.
I love that. And shifting to the metaverse hype cycle that we've seen over the past decade, it's come, it's gone, and we're finally starting to see some measurable results for ROI and training and sales for frontline operations and others. And I'm curious, what are your opinions on how and why now and how the noise is distracting buyers from this signal?
Lucky ones, like that.
So I guess I lean into the big thesis of what Ash and I arrived at when we sort of started building a synthetic believable humans, right? AI is giving XR a brain. XR gives AI a body. Together, they create a new interface for learning, training, sales, customer engagement, right? So to me, I feel like, you know, technology's ripened over the last decade, right? And, you know, it's led to enterprise adoption. The winners are not the companies chasing the coolest demos. The winners are the ones tying immersive and AI experience to measurable business outcomes. And it's sort of just very possible now, right?
And I think in addition to the AI, I think there's also been a lot of maturity on the hardware end. You know, I think that the Quest 2 was the first, you know, all-encompassing device where you didn't need to drive it with a PC that really was performant. And I think the Quest 3 definitely improved on that significantly. And you add a little Vision Pro into the mix, and I think you suddenly have some meaningful devices in the market that enable those experiences.
Absolutely. And it's interesting to think back to that trajectory. You mentioned the Google Cardboard. I remember that being such a exciting thing for everyone to see. And unfortunately, that set the standard for some people's view of VR, of how it is. And that's, you know, very different. And then we had the Oculus Go, which was really just a prototype that shouldn't have made it to market. And then here we are now with more robust and also the barrier to access has been lowered on the price point. So that leads to more consumer adoption, which is great. And I'm curious, I want to learn more about your believable humans. What is that term for within Kinemerik?
So really, you know, we think that, you know, as we've experimented, as Lucky alluded to, you know, with LLMs, you know, driving human avatars, if you will, with our proprietary orchestration layer in between, you're able to create believable synthetic humans in these spatial experiences. And believable, I think, has, it's a loaded definition, but really what we use as the bar is that if you get into an experience and you're interacting with one of these synthetic humans, you really get lost in that conversation or that interaction. And you're really kind of focused on your goal or your objective for that interaction. So that's what it really means to us, is creating enough of a package of a synthetic human that can kind of trick your brain into learning the subject matter or practicing the subject matter that matters for that express use case.
That's so valuable, especially in today's day and age for, I would say, a multitude of generations. You think about graduates right now that are graduating college. They were in high school during COVID. They don't have that skill set of social, emotional learning, so to speak, that we may have gotten ourselves through that in-person experience. So I think what you're building is fantastic for that role-playing scenario, because the believability helps increase that knowledge retention and bring it back to your mind whenever you're in that actual scenario. So I love it. You're differentiating yourself through that believability, because I've seen so many really cringe AI avatars that just aren't doing it. So I love that y'all are focusing on that. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Ashley.
Now, I'm curious, from your perspective, why does enterprise keep getting XR wrong? And let's talk about the shift from buying headsets to buying outcomes.
You know, I think for a long time, enterprises were chasing the coolest demo, right? And I think the winners are the ones that have been tying to business outcomes, measurable business outcomes, right? I think that's always where you get attracted by shiny objects. I think, you know, and you don't really understand the technology and invest in, you know, the business challenges more so than like what is exciting, then you have problematic outcomes, right? So I think, you know, that's been a big challenge for anybody. Like, you know, it was the novelty that drove a lot of the early stage, I feel like. And, you know, like Ash was alluding to, like, you know, a big inflection point was the maturation, right, of technology, right? So, you know, the winners are the ones that are tying immersive AI experiences to measurable outcomes, I think. Faster onboarding, better retention, lower training costs, improved conversion, safer operations, things of that nature, right? And I think they're the ones that are winning today.
1,000%. They're being proactive, not reactive, and therefore gaining a higher competitive edge in this economy with your experience, which I love.
Yeah. I think, you know, we are moving from XR as an experience to XR as a performance layer. It is less about the wow factor now and more about the workflows, the analytics, the repeatability, the ROI.
Yes, absolutely. And one thing I want to highlight here, because I love the value of intentional design, and I want to highlight to the audience here your approach and what makes you different. You both have an outcomes first approach whenever you tackle a project, which I love. And that includes defining the why and the what, which I think is the number one question everyone should be asking themselves. What are we trying to accomplish? What is the why? But number two, your human-centered design, that's so important, whether that be human behavior, psychology, inclusivity. The three, the iterative execution, this is the best part of being a maker. And I think this is what makes you two work so well, because you two are brothers. And that iterative execution, I think, is so important. The ability to say, no, we could do this better. Let's do it. That back and forth. But the tech with purpose. You're not chasing the shiny tech. You build for the long term. So I just love that you actually are transparent about your approach.
Thank you. And I mean, for us, you know, it's a fast moving environment, especially being at the intersection of AI and spatial computing. So if you're not constantly, you know, putting a magnifying glass to what you're doing yourself and thinking about, you know, what are the next steps or how you could be using these new tools to create a better experience, then you're certainly going to fall behind. And, you know, maybe even worse so, not use the technology to its maximal power, which, you know, I think touching back to your last question, I think that's a lot of, you know, what enterprise experienced with AR and VR early on is that, you know, they had a solution that was on VR, but was it really expressly designed to use the technology maximally? And I think a lot of solutions that got traction up front and ended up withering or, you know, fizzling out in the market, you know, they did some of it really well, but they weren't using the technology to its maximal power.
Yes, 100%. And one good example of that is Accenture. Back in 2022, when Altspace was still around, they created a onboarding environment, a digital twin of Accenture's HQ in Altspace. And what they did is, instead of like having a new employee read a handbook, which is pretty boring and 2D, they incorporated the handbook into a series of experiences. So instead of learning about phishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, from a handbook. They actually had the avatar go out to like a fishing dock and see fish jumping out with little messages. So it's more, and they're able to track that too, which is great.
Absolutely.
And I think there were early adopters there, but as we've seen, alt space has gone away and there's that decentralization aspect of what happens when you create something like that. Does it exist forever? And that's where I want to go into kind of what you're planning for in the future. So as you two are innovating and being early adopters, what are you doing with Kenameric to stay ahead of that curve that's coming?
Sure. Well, we're really looking to, you know, create a lot more self-serve platformization of the things that we're doing with the Kenameric framework today. Really, you know, using visual editors in the past, you know, created a pseudo good experience. But I think a lot of it was inherently limited by the technology available. With the, you know, approach and the technologies that are available to us today, you could really get a lot done through a simple, you know, 2D interface to drive really powerful spatial experiences. So that's a lot of our work today. And then obviously continuing to enrich the overall encompassing behavior of our synthetic humans. Right now, we're using them a lot in, you know, learning and training applications, but we're big believers that believable synthetic humans powered, you know, by our orchestration layer with an underlying LLM will have, you know, a lot more uses over the next couple of years to the next decade. So we're really gearing up to kind of meet the puck where it's going to be.
Awesome. And I wanted to talk to you about a launch that's coming up for you guys, something called Spatial Studio. Would you mind sharing a little bit more about that? Because it sounds really exciting.
Well, that exactly aligns with what we were just talking about. So really, you know, today, Kenameric focuses on our proprietary framework, which really is an orchestration layer that wraps around an LLM to drive those synthetic human, you know, interactions. But, you know, we've been working on platformizing that. So, you know, maybe for deeper, more rich, you know, enterprise deployments, there'll still be, you know, the need for a framework-based implementation, but for a lot less, you know, intensive kinds of use cases, you know, you could basically hop into a web editor, be able to, you know, create, you know, meaningful personas that relate to your business, drive particular exchanges or, you know, interactions that you want to have your team members really be able to get really nice and, you know, really refined on and deploy them directly to the headset. So that's, you know, that's kind of what we've been thinking about and working on, you know, with a considerable amount of our bandwidth recently.
I love that. And one, I want to say this is incredible because as someone who's been in this space for a while, not as long as you guys, I remember I see a trend, and the trend is there's always a middle person between the enterprise client and the technology, and the middle person is the one that builds the experience. I remember doing a project for the Air Force where we had to basically disseminate this logic series of how to change the outboard tire on a CV-22 Osprey and translate that into like a storyboard for XR. It's a lot harder than you think, but in order to give the ability for the client to make those decisions themselves, because they are the ones that are boots on the ground, they know the details that need to happen. And I think I've never seen that happen before on such a humanistic scale. So I wanted to elevate that to those listening, that there's nothing else like this that I've seen that's been successful. So bravo for working on this. And I really truly feel this is going to be well received across enterprise because they're looking for that flexibility to create that storytelling content and simulation themselves.
We definitely think so. So, you know, we're hopeful that it's going to provide a lot of value to a lot of people who weren't thinking about spatial before and who've, you know, thought about spatial, but haven't been able to, you know, generate the content or iterate on the content at a level that they've wanted to previously.
Absolutely. And for those listening, just to give you a quick description, Spatial Studio is Kenameric's authoring environment for immersive storytelling and simulation design. It empowers teams to build complex XR experiences visually, no deep coding required, while maintaining enterprise-grade precision. So anything from enterprise training workflows to marketing activations, which is a big one, and I want to talk more about that, Spatial Studio brings creative freedom with structured development. So use cases here would be XR onboarding modules for field operations to decrease downtime, decrease potential injuries and risk, virtual retail training for customers and interaction simulations. I don't know about you, but last time I walked into a retail environment, it was the worst possible experience because like no one wants to help you. So I love that this is a solution. And then immersive storytelling. I'm in the marketing community as well, and that is the hot word right now is storytelling. If people can do it well and do it intentionally, then you've got your audience. But if you can't do it well, you've lost them. So I love that you all are focusing on that storytelling aspect, which is very human.
Unlocking unlimited practice, right? Realistic scenarios before they're in high stakes situations.
Yes. Now, I want to zoom out a little bit to talk about you two guys. Now, you two are brilliant, and I want to talk through and learn, how did you guys come to, let's create Kinemeric? What was that conversation like? Talk me through that.
Sure. Lucky, you want to share your perspective on this side?
Sure. Me and Ash have been building for a long, long time, actually. I think when we were kids, Ash started coding, and it's just been a natural ride since, right, of me and him building different things in different incarnations. And you know, about 2 years ago when we started building Kinemeric, it was, I guess, a natural inflection point of what we'd already been doing and, you know, the demand we were already servicing in innovation and emerging tech, and us already building, I guess, separately AI and XR for SMEs and enterprises, right? And a lot of things we were building were naturally converging at the point of what we're doing today. And historically, like you were saying, we were in the middle of like a customer and their, or an enterprise and their requirements, their goals of the technology, and helping them surface how to actually get there and build it and achieve that, right? And then deploying it and going through the cycles. So when we start looking at this, I mean, we start thinking about, well, how do we democratize this for, you know, people to be able to do? And at the same time, we started seeing that, you know, a lot of the training we had built to date was very intentional, but in the traditional way, right? It's like you go through a scenario, you're in a stereo 360 world, you see something happen in front of you, then you're going to have multiple choice or something of that nature, right? And it's great. You're still part of it. It's better than the PDFs that you're getting or the click-throughs on an LMS system that you know, they weren't getting the learner base to that apex of where they could be, right? And, you know, we started experimenting with, how does this actually come together to create believable scenarios where you can actually be a part of it? And it wasn't decision trees, but organic conversation and things that were more real to what that person was going to go through in those scenarios. And I don't know, it's been a road, right? When we started, there wasn't even real-time conversation APIs for you to, like, you know, be able to have a fluid conversation like you and I are having right now, me, you, and Ash, right? It was like, there's a button presser in there to like send your response. And like, it was tricky, right? And like building that orchestration layer, kudos to Asha and the team of guys that actually made it possible. They took that and they ran with it, and you're able to realize that, right? But it's been 2 years of watching the ecosystem catch up to where we were trying to go, right? And we still—
Isn't that a good feeling?
You know, it's a great feeling, you know, to see it working. It is. I think we have a lot of work to be done. Job's not done yet, but we're moving in the right direction.
Absolutely. I'm curious, as brothers, is it ever difficult to work with one another? Do you ever find instances where you're like, whew, I need to take a step back? Or is it—
I think I drive Ash crazy a lot of the time.
No, I think if anything, like, you know, it's like, you know, short term, we drive each other a little bit crazy, but I think it's always about, you know, pushing our goals forward. So like, you know, if we're advocating for different sides of a particular argument, then, you know, it can definitely get to a very brotherly tone, if you will. But I think if anything, it removes a lot of the flack of, you know, having to sugarcoat or like, you know, having to put things in a particular way. Like, we could just have very open, candid conversations like we've been having for the last 30 or 40 years, you know? So I think it enables us to move a lot more quickly in a lot of ways.
I love that. Honesty is a gift, and clear communication is a gift as well. And I see that as a utility to move faster towards the goals. And when you're working with friction or people that don't know how to communicate, it become very difficult. You have found balance together, pushing each other in the right, meaningful ways, but also embracing your creativity and embracing those, why not let's do this? Why not let's do that? But I want to talk through, like, how did you both get your inspiration for being the hands-on makers, the technical people, the create? You started coding at a young age. Like, where did that inspiration come from?
I think it was curiosity. You know, our father was a pretty successful electronics-based entrepreneur, you know, and we used to spend a lot of time at his office and, you know, with his design studios. He used to do a lot of work with like third-party industrial design houses. And, you know, I think kind of seeing the way he operated his company, you know, I could remember he would like do his rounds around the office and he would just go sit with different people and have conversations, tackle particular kinds of work. So I think it kind of came, you know, naturally and, you know, inherent to what we had seen growing up. So, you know, when we started building the predecessor organizations to Kinemeric, I think we just kind of learned from that and applied it. So we've always been kind of in the weeds, kind of hands-on, you know, don't want to get too removed from actual product and design. So I think just kind of came naturally to us, Ashley.
That's great. I feel like entrepreneurship runs in the blood. That's something I've learned too, of like, I've been able to point back to at least someone in my family who had unintentionally kind of like shown me the world of entrepreneurship as a young age. And that stuff is so valuable. Now looking back on it, have that exposure, the understanding, the talking through, and inventory and sales, like that is such good hands-on experience that I think not a lot of people are getting right now.
Thank you.
Now I'm curious, what's something that has surprised you on this journey of building Kinemeric? Is there something that has kind of come out that you've been like, whew, did not see this coming, whether that be the economy, whether that be regulations, whether that be just the hype cycle of things? What is it?
I think, you know, when we take a step back and we can be reflective about things, then, you know, the overall macro hype cycle makes a lot of sense. But when you're kind of operating day to day, you know, and you're really, you know, in those trenches, sometimes you get tricked by the hype cycle yourself, you know. So I think there's been a number of times where we thought that, you know, Spatial would have been significantly bigger by now. But, you know, there's obviously very meaningful pockets and, you know, places where we're getting, you know, nice traction, like in enterprise. But I think that sometimes, you know, you trick yourself and you're like, oh, wow, you know, we're going to see Spatial be significantly bigger by the end of this year. And it's steadily growing year after year. I mean, there's more headsets out there and more users than ever before. But, you know, I think that it's definitely different than we really cut our teeth in the mobile revolution. And I think that, you know, me and Luck have discussed this ad nauseum at this point. And I think there were quite a few interesting factors that led to like this overnight like smartphone adoption that occurred in 2009, 2010 that maybe are lacking from other computing mediums uptake cycles. And I think we see spatial computing a lot more similar to those other uptake cycles by this point. So I think sometimes we trick ourselves in the hype cycle, in the minutia, but when we take a step back, I think it makes a lot of sense with where we're at today.
It's a good point. That's something that I haven't heard someone articulate well, and I like it. You're right. I was so certain in 2022, like, we're here. It's happening. VR is finally mainstream. And then, you know, the trough of disillusionment, I got out of it. I want to go back to marketing activations, because that is a space that I don't think more people are focusing on right now that they should be. I want to talk more about that and what you see as like the perfect use case for marketing activations. For example, we're in the NBA playoffs right now. Knicks Spurs tonight. Unfortunately, I'm in Oklahoma City Thunder. We lost. I'm rooting for the Knicks.
New York.
Yes, go New York. So last playoff cycle, I actually approached the Thunder team to say, hey, what if you did an augmented reality experience for the playoff t-shirts that get in all of the stadiums? That way it's brand recognition, it's user-generated content. You can actually start to track things. And with that being said, awesome idea. Actual application is difficult, and also there's a cost involved. Now, that is just one specific example of using spatial computing or augmented reality for marketing or brand activations. What would be Kinemeric's like perfect use case of a marketing brand activation if you were to articulate it to a client?
I mean, running with, you know, the Knicks' current momentum, I think it would be great if you showed up at the Garden and, you know, you could kind of spin up a believable synthetic Willis Reed, you know, and interact with him and get his thoughts on the game or the series. You know, obviously you would need to get the buy-in of the estate or whatever it may be. But I think something like that would be, you know, really interesting and really tasty.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Think of all the cool like group pictures that could come out of that.
Yeah.
Having an avatar or like, oh, I just interviewed to see what their thoughts are. What is the game predictions for tonight? That is huge. And I think that it also lends to like the fan community as well. Peer-to-peer learning is huge.
Absolutely. And I think it would just be novel and fun above all.
Yes, yeah. Abso-freaking-lutely. There's going to be a huge surge of people at Madison Square Garden tonight. So what a great place to have brand awareness and bring emerging tech right to the forefront.
For sure.
Absolutely.
It's going to be awesome. A wild night at the Garden.
It is. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. I cannot tell you how much I'm rooting for the Knicks right now.
Appreciate it.
Yes, of course. Of course. Now I'm curious, let's say 10 years into the future, you know, what does Kinemeric look like to you? What is that vision for what you're building towards the future?
Sure. So I'll jump in, Luck, and you know, feel free on anything I miss here. But I think, you know, touching back to you know, more proliferation of believable synthetic humans aside from a learning and training use cases. You know, I expect them to be, you know, kind of in retail, you know, on, you know, online web experiences, customer service based experiences. So really, we want to define our orchestration layer and our tools well enough that we're ready for that proliferation. So, you know, if you roll up to, you know, a McDonald's, you know, restaurant or ordering window, you're not dealing with a, you know, a painful interface where you're clicking and you're trying to go back, but you could talk to, you know, an interesting character who's able to take your order effectively, push it through. Or if you end up at a banking website, you could, you know, interact with a believable synthetic human that really understands your banking needs and, you know, the opportunities for having different kinds of personas in different kinds of use cases and, you know, cycling those out to keep things fresh and new as, you know, different kinds of activations or different times of the year kind of come in place. I think that, you know, that's something that we want to be at the very center of and really have, you know, the premier believable synthetic human tech to be able to service all of those use cases.
I echo Ash, right? The future I want Kinemeric to own is the layer where AI and spatial come together so you can rehearse reality before you live it, you know, but I'll be straight. Any, you know, giving you a 10-year roadmap is guessing, right? I mean, five years ago, AI wasn't in our plan. Now it's at the center of it. So honest answer, we're building towards a clear direction and staying ready to be surprised. But I think really the reality I want is very similar to what Ash is saying in that way. I think how do you use believable humans in your life, whether it be in the new glasses form factor, it's like my buddy and he's with me and he's coming through the journey and I can rehearse anything with him in real time, right?
Mm-hmm. And I want to highlight something here that I think is really relevant for those listening. And I've been seeing this as a trend. More consumers are increasingly preferring chatbots over human agents for quick routine tasks, checking orders, checking store hours. And it's interesting because one, that is zero wait time and 24/7 availability. Two, that there's that non-judgmental factor of like, I don't have to be embarrassed about the question I'm going to be asking. But three, the task specificity. I am more likely to get the specificity from a chatbot that has access to all of my information versus a human that may have no idea the patterns of why I've called. And therefore, it increases the resolution faster. So I love that you all are focusing on that because I do see that's where the trend is heading towards, is kind of divvying up what is necessary for a chatbot task that is way more efficient and versus a human person that needs that context.
Certainly.
Now, let's think of, when we look at XR and AI, things are constantly changing. And AI, of course, has been the golden child ever since the metaverse lost its spotlight in the hype cycle. In terms of AI, what excites you the most when it comes to the intersection of XR and the ability to move faster?
I think real multimodality is going to be really important. I think that, you know, world models, if you will, you know, I think that's going to be really interesting. We've seen all of the power of language models over the last, you know, 2 to 3 years really come in. But now you give them, you know, 2 or 3 more senses. And, you know, I think that the actual power and yield goes up exponentially.
Absolutely. And that's a word that I think people are going to hear more of is the multimodality of AI. People are only taking advantage of mostly one modality, and that's typing. And there's so much information that can be lost in translation from our brain to our fingers. So using that multimodality is actually beneficial in the long run. So I encourage people to actually like dive into that and don't be afraid to do it.
We're already starting to leverage some multimodality in our solutions. You know, we're paying attention to biometrics and understanding, you know, the user's intentions, not just from their words, but also from where they're looking, their body language, et cetera. So I think we're, you know, very early and, you know, it's a bit of a rudimentary stage we're at right now. But the opportunities as devices continue to open up other sensors or they include other sensors as well, I think that the powers, you know, go up tremendously.
Absolutely. The world becomes your oyster at that point.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I really love what you two are building, and I really appreciate the intentionality that you bring behind this. This is why I started the podcast in the first place, is to highlight cool conversations from cool people like you building really intentional things. So one, thank you for taking the time to come on the show. But two, for those that are listening that want to follow along on your work or learn more about Kinemeric, where can they find you?
On X, you can find us as We Are Kinemeric. Or on LinkedIn, you can just find us as Kinemeric. And I myself am on X as LL Gobindrum, and Ash is on X as well.
Yeah, I'm Ashwin Gobindrum on X.
Wonderful. I'll be sure to link your handles in the show notes. That way listeners can connect with you guys and learn more about Kinemeric. I myself will be subscribing to your RSS feed on your website so I can be notified when new updates come around. And I'm really excited about your spatial studio that's coming. We'd love to try that out when it's live. But thank you so much for taking time to come on the show.
Thanks for having us, Ashwin.
All right. Thank you. Stay tuned for the next episode and don't forget to like and subscribe to be notified when new episodes go live. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Coffee and Code. Your support means everything, so be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also follow us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more insights, updates, and behind-the-scenes content. Stay curious, stay informed. Until next time, stay hydrated and do something nice for someone.